It is an early Thanksgiving. I keep getting thrown off thinking that, all right, after next week, December is going to be here, but we still have a whole nother week of November. And on a business and radio where everything's built off of your week to week to week to week to week around the broadcast, it throws me off.
Right. Yeah.
Have you got your turkey brining yet?
Are you kidding me?
I'm stopping on the way home to get everything loaded up because I was like, holy cow, that's next Thursday?
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's here. And, you know, it just seems like it snuck up on us overnight. It's already Thanksgiving, but Halloween just seemed like, you know, like last weekend. So it's crazy days, but time flies. And then, you know, and then we do have a little longer then between Thanksgiving and Christmas to maybe enjoy the Christmas holiday a little more. If we just kind of slow down and gather that in, maybe it won't be quite so crazy.
And I don't know how many are left, but the Coconino Forest is selling 111 permits, about $15 each. And if you want to go cut your own Christmas tree,
oh, nice.
They're issuing, they've got pine, pinyon, fir, and they've got it broken up into different sections. In each section, they have a certain amount of
permits. Have you ever done that?
Permits. I have. We've cut it a couple times out of the White Mountains.
Okay.
I've never done one up out of, this one's out of Coconino Forest, this press release I have talking about it. Everything has come from the White Mountains, but that is a lot of fun. You just, you have to measure your home.
Take a tape measure with you. I'm sure, done the same thing I've done.
10 feet does
not look
very tall.
You go out and you cut a tree
in the
forest and you bring it back and you look and you go, oh my word, what have I done?
Yeah. What does this sound like? National Lampoon Vacation, Christmas vacation.
Yeah, it's kind of that way. Yeah, we can cram it in there. So you end up having to cut the bottom off of it. And then, of course, where you make the new cut, there's holes. So you're drilling holes and sticking branches in. It's pretty funny. But when you're out in the forest and there's 60, 70, 80-foot trees, and, you know, that tree that looks like it would fit in your house is still 15 feet tall. It looks bitty out there, but it's not.
It's not.
Of course, the one you pick 6 miles from the car, and you got to drag it back to the car. And
yeah, well, because all the good ones you can see from your car have already been cut.
Jay, when it comes to a Christmas tree, let's say you cut one down at the forest. When you bring it home, is it still okay to, I've heard people throw it in the swimming pool for about a day and let it soak up really good and wet and then let it dry out and put it in the house?
Well, you know, the cool thing about cutting your own is you don't have to worry about that. It is so fresh.
Okay.
It'll never dry out, you know, in that short of time. The ones you buy at the tree lot have been cut, you know, days or weeks ahead of time by the time you get it. But that is the one advantage of cutting your own is they stay fresh for a long time. You know, I wouldn't advise cutting it and waiting 2 weeks to put it up. But, you know, if you cut it and come back and put it up even the next weekend, just keep it in the shade, keep it cool, maybe keep it covered. If you want to throw it in the pool, that's fine. I wouldn't do it for a week. The chlorine does kind of funny things to green foliage on
things. Well, and the pool guys really hate all those little pine needles that end up in the bottom of their pool and in their filter system.
It's just as good to put it in a bucket and leave it in the shade, let it soak up water.
Of course, if you're going to chop it, you want to check that tree for birds' nests and maybe some other things too as well. So, right? Just in case you put it up, all of a sudden there's
an angry owl in your
extra guest for dinner.
The only time I've seen porcupines in Arizona was in a tree.
Oh yeah, climbing up
right
a tree.
On Middle Mountain, just outside Alpine.
Uh huh.
Two porcupines. I kept hearing the strange noise. What is that? I just went to investigate. Porcupines overhead.
And you definitely don't want to have one of those in your house.
No. Or fall on you.
Or that. Yeah, exactly.
Going into Christmas season, you'd mentioned it's still good enough time to plant a lot of things. Our germination time takes a little bit longer. Our winter grasses, if you can still find seed, you can still apply. Just the germination rate slows down with the cooler nights.
Yeah, a little bit. Had an interesting call from a guy this last week. He had planted his winter lawn and then left, and it didn't, you know, That's never a good idea. Don't plant your winter lawn and then go away for a week or two. It needs lots of water to get established. But anyway, he didn't do that. Now he's late. He's behind the eight ball. One thing that will help speed it up is you notice a lot of people anymore don't cover. You know, back in the day, you put your seed down, you put manure on top of it or something, and you know, everybody did that. Not so many people do that anymore, but that is a great technique. Once it gets later, that dark material will retain heat. It'll keep the soil warmer, and it'll speed up your germination. So if you're late and behind the eight ball on putting your lawn in, I would definitely consider covering it with compost or manure or something like that to get it to germinate evenly and quicker.
Most nurseries that would sell seeds sell topsoil material.
Some type of topping material like that as well, absolutely. So that's also a good technique. You can really sow ryegrass all winter long. It has to get very, very, very cold before it won't germinate. It's slower. It takes longer to do.
You just have to make sure.
Takes less water. I mean, when it's 95 degrees out, you're having to water 3, 4, 5 times a day. Right now, probably once a day will keep it wet enough to germinate.
So. And that's just during the germination period. If that seed dries out, we lose it, so we've got to keep it wet until it sprouts.
Correct.
Once it sprouts, you can really cut back.
Especially after the first mowing. I generally like to let it water good until that first mowing. And once you've mowed it, you can go, you know, get your fertilizer on there and then go to, you know, every other day or whatever your typical watering pattern schedule is. But please do that. Don't keep it watering. And then once we get into, if we do have an El Nino, there's been winters where I literally have not watered anything in my landscape all winter. We're going into the time of year now where we can really cut back on our water. It's easy to say and hard to do in the summertime. You know, it really is hard to cut back on water and still have things look good. But right now, this is when people way, 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 way overwater. I still have only watered my trees and shrubs and vines since all that rain in October. I've watered one time since then on trees and shrubs. I've watered my lawn to get it to germinate. But on established landscape plants, one watering since in the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, there was almost as much annual rain we received in October.
Oh, yeah, I've got 7 inches at my house. So which is
the state average.
Which is the Phoenix average. Yeah, so there are winters, literally turn that sucker off, you know, and pick a plant in your landscape. In my case, it's pretty easy. It's Cape honeysuckle. When the Cape honeysuckle looks like it's wilting a little bit, then I water everything else because it's the one that's going to damage the quickest or look bad or be affected. You know, some other things are going to get watered maybe before they need it, but, you know, you kind of pick one indicator plant and do that. Through the wintertime, I don't even schedule a day that my landscape plants water. The lawn waters on a schedule, but the station that my program that my landscape trees and shrubs are on is not scheduled to water. I do it manually because it's, like I said, I've watered once in the last 6 weeks. So you don't need to have it running once a week.
And I've been doing most of my trees manually. I've got a 12-station irrigation that only the first six work. I've tried replacing the modules on 7 through 12. I've tried replacing the valves. It really just comes down to this circuit, the control panel, is now 17 years old. You know, my truck's not even that old. My truck's 10 years old. It's outside. It's an electronic device.
It's cooked.
Yeah. But I have to manually turn on the trees, and it's all on drip still.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll leave, and that the drip's the only reason I'm getting away with it. Because if it was on bubblers, I couldn't leave it until I got home that night. But on the drip, I'll leave the pecans. I'll turn them on in the morning, turn them off when I get home, and with that and the rain, and my pecan trees seem like they are. They've put on new shoots going into their their deciduous season.
Well, it's, you know, that's forces you to run drip the way you should run it, 10, 12, 14 hours, even a couple of days straight. Yeah, it doesn't hurt anything. on drip. So that's good. I can one up you on the irrigation controller. I had my brother Jerry, who's still in the landscape sprinkler repair business, come over because I had an issue with my. It was, of course, as soon as I got my lawn in the back, my heads weren't popping up right. So I called him and he came over and he called me up. He goes, "Hey, I'm not sure I remember how to work this old Irritrol clock. I have a 34-year-old Irritrol control sprinkler. It's the original controller that I put in when the house was new."
You got your money's worth.
Yeah, and I'm not changing it till it. I know how to work it, so I'm not changing it. It is certainly not as flexible or as nice as the new ones, but it works great.
And what? It's an Irritrol. What are some other brands that you guys see frequently? Hunter's a big one.
Hunter's kind of the big one. I think they bought Irritrol, if I'm not mistaken. I think Raindial. Maybe they bought Raindial. Hunter, Raindial, Irritrol, Toro. You know, there's a bunch of them out there, but the Hunter's pretty good stuff, I think. And you brought up a good point when you're mounting your irrigation controller, you know, try to put it. And the reason mine has probably lasted is it's in a very shady, protected spot. It never gets any direct sun.
And at the time it was built, it probably didn't have a lot of the electronics that the newer ones have in
today. No, it does not even near as sophisticated as that. No.
So you don't have those circuits to fry out there. And the little digital screen starts to bleed out.
It doesn't have much of a screen, just a little digital display for time and that sort of thing. But so it's a lot simpler, but it's also in a very particular, doesn't ever get any direct sun beating on it.
Well, let's see how we can help Jack this Saturday morning here at Rosie on the House, calling from, somewhere it has citrus. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
I have three citrus trees, and I've had great luck in the past. I have a lemon and a grapefruit and an orange. And this year, I don't see any or very little fruit coming. What did I do wrong, or what's happening to the trees?
Well, your fruit should be very visible right now because it should be starting to color up. The fruit should be basically full-sized at this point and starting to color. Color is a function of cooler weather. It doesn't necessarily mean it's ripe or not. In places in the tropics, citrus fruit never does get very completely colored because it's not cold enough. But it's hard to say what you did wrong. You did something wrong a long time ago, though, because, you know, the trees bloom in the spring. They set their fruit. The fruit goes all summer and into the early fall, and now they're starting to ripen, depending on variety. So it's difficult for me to say what might have happened. I assume the trees, other than that, are healthy looking. If they are, just continue to fertilize. Don't prune. A lot of times people prune too heavy. Citrus are a shrub. They should be treated like a shrub. They should just be shaped once in a while. They don't need heavy pruning. They'd prefer not to be pruned heavily.
They produce fruit on the old growth.
That's true. And so, you know, if you're constantly pruning, you're never going to, you know, you're not going to have an old growth because you're cutting off all the new growth. So you want to, if you're going to prune citrus, you want to wait till after they've blossomed to prune them much. So late spring or early summer. Then you can also see where the new fruit is and you can be careful where you prune.